Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Okay, so I have this topic for us today to talk about. I keep hearing, especially from newer members in the groups, I keep hearing a lot of family members asking me, well, how can I hold a conversation or talk to my loved one about a boundary that I'm setting up and they won't get upset and they won't be angry with me and I can just hold that conversation and get them to accept what I'm saying?
All right, let's just jump on in.
Okay,
so number one, we're talking timing. Timing is everything. And I think for myself personally, timing is the hardest part of this process, because if something's going on, or let's face it, if I have a thought that has been plaguing me that I want to discuss and you're in my presence, here we go, I never see you, let me just bring this up. It's fascinating because that apparently is my timing. And people need to be approached at a specific time that works. So what we're suggesting here is that you start noticing timing issues. So I'm going to go through a couple of things to look for. Number one, how pressured do you feel? How intense do you feel about that? If you're doing a larger, more substantial topic, then you need to be working on yourself so hard to calm your system down and come up with ways that you're going to say it that's not challenging or that's not pushy. You're going to work on not actually seeing this as an emergency, because as soon as you speak from the place of, oh my God, this is an emergency, I got to help, I got to do something, you've already lost the balance that you need to have this conversation. And also, we're going to be talking about ways that you can see where the other person is at, what's going on with them, so that you're going in when they're the most receptive. Because there are cues that you're going to start looking for that means that person may be available to hear you.
Okay, I totally agree. And that is especially around when you have that opportunity to take the time and space and do all of what you're talking about, Kayla. That sit-down conversation or something that you want to bring up with your loved one, you definitely want to get the timing down correct. You also want to be really working and practicing the communication skills. It's really difficult to get into a conversation and not have some understanding of the communication skills. I also tell family members that oftentimes when you get into these conversations, they are not going to go swimmingly well. So anticipate it, right? So I love what you said, Kayla, and I think it's actually one of the first steps that you have to take into account is calming your own system down before you go into the conversation. Even if your system is a little bit heightened, kind of making some promises to yourself that if you start to really feel like you can't control it, that you're going to step away. Right? That you're going to step away, calm yourself down, and then come back to it at a later time when you are calmer. But also understand that oftentimes what you're saying or what boundary you're putting in place, your loved one is not going to be happy with that. They don't want that. This is about you setting down boundaries that work for you. And I often equate it to a teenager wants what a teenager wants. So when you're dealing with an adolescent and they want something from you and you put down a boundary, you stick with it. And they throw, I call them teenager temper tantrums, but you don't give in to the temper tantrum, but you also don't yell at them and scream at them and write or try and convince them. It's the car is staying in the driveway tonight. It's just too dangerous, right? Or I will tell you one time my son wanted to put paintball pellets in the freezer and then go out on Halloween with a paintball gun. And it was In fact, now you're not going out for Halloween. You're staying home. And it wasn't fun because he was really upset. No, everybody gets to go out. And oh my God, you're the only mother that won't let me out. And, you know, and that kind of thing. But I really stuck to my guns and was like, and I stayed calm.
Yes.
Right. I didn't freak out. And I also didn't get pulled into the arguments. It was like, yeah, well, this is the decision I've made. I know I'm not like other parents. Oh, well, this is who you're stuck with. But I also didn't expect him to take it lightly or just go, oh, yes, you're right, Mom.
No problem.
Yeah, no problem. Right. And so when we're dealing with someone with substance use disorder or mental health struggles, I anticipate that they're not going to take it lightly. They're not going to be happy with the boundary that I'm setting.
And listening to you, I realized that there's many different discussions. So there's the my boundary piece, which is, no, I'm not going to do that, or that's not going to happen, which is one thing very clear. To me, that's the one that I could be the calmest about, because I've made a decision. I'm just going to state it. I don't have to speak for a half hour about why I've made that decision. I'm just going to say it. No, you can't have the car, or no, you cannot bring your friends over, or no, I'm not paying for that. So that is almost the easier one for me, because once I've made my decision, it's really just about stating the decision again, or stating the decision in the first place. But then there's other pieces of it, because I really appreciate you clarifying this for me. There's the, I'm going to put it in the realm of, you know, I was thinking about this thing that you were talking about where you want to do blah, blah, blah. And I kind of want to have my part in engaging in that conversation. That's when it's like, warning, warning, warning. I have to be uber prepared for this, where, you know, this is not about me as much. It's about what I'm thinking about you. And this is, if you look at most of the people that we're working with here, as family members, this is where we always jump in. This is the part that we are practiced in, and we go in and we're like, well, why don't you do this? And how about this? And how about this? This is the part where I started the conversation thinking about that part of it. And it's so fascinating how 99% of the time it is not received well. 99% of the time, the person doesn't want to hear what you have to say, or is not interested, or thinks that you're wrong. Or in my case, even if my daughter agrees with me, she doesn't like the way I said it or the timing of it. You know, like, why are you talking to me about now, and that you really hurt my feelings, or it's like, you know, that's all about you. And so I've been practicing this one where it's like, how do I have a conversation about something that feels more, I'm going to use the word equal. Okay. Because I feel like sometimes what we do is we jump in with what I like to call our brilliant ideas, because we are smart people and we have like common sense and we want to go on with life like that. But it's the way that we do it that is so offensive and off-putting to the other person that you might as well have been talking to yourself or have blown them up somehow. So this is the practice that I'm trying to engage in. It's like, okay, what's my tone right now? And by the way, there's the yelling, and then there's this other tone that I personally get, which is very clipped and pretty harsh and clear. And it's not a lot of words, but it's clear. And I have learned that that sounds very mean. Okay. And so this is really hard for me because it's a particular way that I think, and it does not get received well. And I've been working so hard on softening and being more open and being more engaging and being more collaborative with whoever I'm talking to. And this is, each one of us has our little Achilles heel with this. Like, how do you come across that does not bode well for the conversation? And I love the fact that we all get a chance to stop and look at this. Am I hysterical? Am I screeching? Am I going into advice? Am I kind of harsh or clipped about it? Do I have an edge to my voice? That's the subtleties that we're talking about when you talk about communication.
Right. And I hear this over and over again. And I just heard it this week. He or she needs to do this. I know exactly what they need to do. They need to go into treatment, and they need to do this, and they need to do that. And they need. So in other words, what you want to do is you want to tell them what you think they need to do based on your experience and your beliefs, right? Without any consideration of what your loved one may be thinking about this particular situation. Wouldn't it be nicer if you could find a way to kind of understand their perspective and then kind of get collaborative and try and help them or influence them in a way versus you need this, you have to do this. I know exactly what you need. We think we do. And I'm speaking from experience. I think I know, but I really don't know. I really don't know. And when I am doing that, when I am trying to force my own ideas and my own thoughts onto my loved one, what I'm doing is I'm reducing the opportunity for them to learn about themselves. Mm-hmm. And I am reducing the chances that they will learn to be independent. And I'm not helping. In fact, I may be reducing their self-esteem because I'm basically saying, you can't think for yourself. You need me.
Right.
There's another thing I'd like to talk about with like the boundary setting that I think is a really important piece. It's one thing to be working with a teenager and have this stance of, no, you're not taking the car. It's just too dangerous. But I also think when we're dealing with substance use disorder and the fear and the angst and the frustration and worry that comes along with it adds an exponential layer of fear and terror when you're going to sit down and set down some boundaries or even just have a conversation about boundaries. The fear is, what are they going to go and do? Right. And so it makes having that conversation with them really incredibly anxiety ridden. And it's this added layer that as a family member, mom, dad, spouse, partner, loving relationships, it's just this added layer of terror that I have to learn to calm my own system down. And it's really, really difficult to deal with. And I really think that's where the question of how do I have this conversation that's going to lead to my loved one being more accepting. And then when I come back with, well, you got to get really good at the communication skills because that's going to open up their mind to your thoughts and ideas. And there's lots of ways of doing that, but you also have to expect some pushback and anticipate it and decide what are you going to do when there's pushback.
If you listen to what you just said, Lori, there's this whole, I watched this in the group where people like, this is going on and you could hear people problem solving and there's but. And part of the reason that we're in the buts is because the person is kind of closed down to making changes. You're trying to get them to change because it affects your sense of well-being. And so what we need to do is, you know, and this happened in the group that this person was going on about what they needed and their issue with their loved one and how people tried to help them. And none of the answers worked because none of the answers worked, which is true. And then at some point, somebody in the group said, what do you need? What do you need right now? And I feel like if you could start with that question, what do I need? Not what do I need from that person? What do I need from myself right now? If I'm putting myself first, if I'm looking at my anxiety and my terror and my fatigue and my exhaustion, the one thing that I absolutely can do at that moment is take care of myself. And I feel like that isn't even on people's list. It's like, take care of yourself first. Give yourself that kind of space between you and the other person so that you can heal yourself and calm your system and think straight and work on this. So if you start with that and then plug in the tools that we're talking about, that's when you have the best shot at communication.
I totally agree with you. But just kind of coming from the perspective of a family member, a mom in particular, who has experienced this and still experiences this on and off, I will tell you this, that if you're experiencing so much angst and so much frustration, maybe the boundary that you're setting is way too big and you need to go a little bit more narrow. Also, you can tell me I need to focus on myself over and over and over again. I almost can't. I can't in that moment. So I love what you're saying, Kayla. I really wish people would stop saying to me, focus on you, and just say, well, let's see, what are some things that you can do to kind of calm your system down in a way that it's like, oh, okay, go and eat, get some rest, do some thinking, just calm it down. The reason why you want to do this is so that you bring your best to the table and you are more likely to influence your loved one in a positive direction. Not always. There may be some level of acceptance that you're going to have to put up with some kind of extremely difficult behavior in order to get through it, this is why you want to calm your system. This is why you need to take care of your own needs. It's so that you can bring the best of you to help affect your loved one.
No, that makes sense. And when people ask us, I need to help my loved one, I need to do something with my loved one. And so our orientation is to start by self-soothing, taking care of yourself, getting some space, getting some perspective. Because if you're too close, I don't know how other people feel, but to me, it's like going to the movies and being in the first row. If you're too close, everything is blurry and overwhelming and you can't see clearly. So when we say self-care, and I actually think this is a really, really important point, that it's not like, oh, you're going to become the Dalai Lama or you're going to sit like the Buddha for 40 years and meditate. It's more like go for a walk, take a shower, eat, and, you know, play around with the vagus nerve, which is the part of the body that helps you soothe, which could be singing or humming, you know. And that's another thing. Get in the car and play your favorite music and sing really loud, or, you know, go someplace where you can actually like express yourself and do what you need to. Or, by the way, call a friend, you know. Or I would like to add, go on one of the modules that we have and start playing around with what tools you could do, because I feel like what makes us so anxious is that feeling of helplessness and feeling like we can't do anything and that we don't have any control. And ultimately, over another human being, we have no control, but we have influence, is what you're saying. And how can we best influence somebody? And what's the best position that we could be in to do that? And so you can have a tool set, but how and when you use the tool set really matters.
Yeah. And I remember the first time I actually started to kind of become aware that I was doing this kind of self-soothing, and it wasn't pleasant. I've said it before. It wasn't pleasant. I actually get resentful that I have to do it. But I will tell you this, just what you said, Kayla. When I'm in those really intense moments and those intense feelings and I'm just frantic, there's so much chaos in my head, I cannot think. And what I have found is when I do go off and do these simple things to self-soothe, and that includes sleeping, eating, drinking enough water, just calming down just enough, it's weird. It's like, Laurie, you have craft skills. What's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, now what skills am I going to use? So it becomes a lot more planned out, a lot more logical, and I'm able to handle things a lot better. And then I get in there and I start to address the issue. And if it goes off the rails, I'll do it again. I'll step back. I'll figure it out. I'll do what I have to do. But what I find oftentimes is I usually come up with a relatively good plan, might go off the rails a little bit, but it really, you know, it doesn't. And I kind of stick with it. I'm also just more aware, and it makes it easier for the next time for me that it's like, oh, no, it's worked in the past. It's kind of like reinforcing my own behavior, I guess, is what it is.
We started out talking about how to engage with your loved one, like what's the way, and if they're not receiving you well, they seem opposed to what you have to say. Of course they do. So assume that that's true, that it's not that you're this horrible person or they're terrible and they never listen to anything you say, but that there's a whole set of skills that you could be working with to shift, to be more aware, to get more space, to have what I would call, after listening to you, a thoughtful process about how you're going to do this and what you're going to do and what you're going to say and the way that you're going to say it, and that you give yourself time and space to be able to think that way, as opposed to what we usually do, by the way, which is get caught up in the looping story. And that looping story of negativity and fear and all that actually agitates us, and it gets in the way of us being effective communicators. So what we're suggesting is having this other way of engaging with yourself, so that you could interrupt that story and kind of come in with a new story to think about and ways to engage with your loved one.
Yeah. And I often say this, I say that craft is the craft communication skills are about learning how you can be more compassionate, caring, and understanding, not that your loved one is going to become more
compassionate,
better conversational. You are. It's all about you.
So how great is that? You get to change. Thank you to your loved ones. You're here. If you work the modules, if you, you know, attend the groups, if you listen to the podcast, you're working on changing yourself. So the best part about that is that outcome is only positive. Right. We're not looking at the outcome of our loved ones. We're looking at our own outcomes and how we get to shift and change. And that inevitably changes the dynamic that you have with your loved one.
Yep. Well, thank you. And I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.